Welcome to Fire After 50. I'm your host, Nancy Davis. I'm so excited about this stage of my life, and I want you to be excited too. Each week, I'll chat with amazing women who have broken glass ceilings, gained decades and decades of wisdom and experience, overcome a lot to be wherever they are, and have a passion they're ready to show up for. You'll be inspired, entertained, and ready to bring the fire yourself. I'm so glad you're here to listen. Here we go. I am so excited to have Kate Allen. Kate and I have been friends for 25 years. We met when we were both living on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, and we were quite pregnant. And we were just these super cool, hip moms to be. Yes, we were, Kate. And we were going to Equinox.
Oh, we thought we were.
Yeah, we thought we were, and that continues to be all that matters. And so we were going to Equinox, which was that, you know, the super cool gym that all the great new classes came out of. We were in there doing body sculpting classes, and I just remember standing a little behind you and going, is she going to do one more bicep curl? Really? Is she really going to? So of course I had to. And so one more little story about that was that Kate, always being a little bit ahead of me, had her baby 3 months before I had mine. And she asked me to babysit. So I babysat for her for the first time so that Kate could go to the gym.
Priorities, baby.
That's a mic drop right there. Your first outing after having a baby.
Is the gym. And having to time it between, you know, nursing.
Exactly. Yes. Anyway, so my husband and I moved when our baby was 3 months old, and yet Kate and I have not only stayed friends, but we've just gotten closer and closer. And I actually think that one of the reasons we've gotten even closer and closer lately is because we are both so on fire about this stage of our lives and have taken a very different look at it lately and are excited about what's to come. And I know I'm, of course, super excited about lighting up other women who are over 50, which we are both well past. Lots of people go through a stage of wanting to be a writer, but you are really like a real serious writer. You've done theater, film, audio drama. You've been published in anthologies. And so I would love for you to tell me the story of you actually becoming a writer and continuing to be one.
I can't pinpoint a time when I wasn't always doing something creative, and whether it was drawing or putting on shows and, you know, with my friends and so on and so forth. But, you know, the moment when I thought, yeah, this is the moment where I could actually do this was fifth grade. And I had a teacher who encouraged me, and, you know, that was all a 10-year-old brain needed. And then just have been literally writing ever since. I got my college degree in history, but then I decided to take a graduate course in screenwriting, but they didn't have screenwriting at my local college. And I took what they had, which was a playwriting course. Mm-hmm. And again, my professor was very encouraging, a lovely, lovely man who I love and respected immensely. It was very encouraging, and I loved it so much, Nancy. I just said, I can see myself doing this for the rest of my life. I just love this electricity in this environment and working with actors I've always loved, and the fact that they put effort and heart and soul into something I may have written still continues to blow my mind. It's so collaborative, and, you know, it's such a living thing that I've stuck with it all these decades later.
So you've been published in two anthologies, one by Vintage Press and one by Penguin, and those are major publishers. So kind of following on what you were just saying, I want to know how that kind of thing happened for you. And then also, it's true that people just show up for your work. Actors, directors, they all want to show up for you. And I want to know why that is. And what is it about you? What is it about your work?
I'm very lucky. I think that, you know, even if I'm not writing something that's, you know, quote unquote funny, there's always some humor, even if it's just the humor of the human condition, that appeals to certain people who feels familiar to, feels true. I mean, it's all about truth. You know, actors want to portray truth, and writers are looking to communicate truth. So I think that that's, you know, a common ground that the actors that I've been lucky to work with, that we've really found. And how did that come about? You know, I went the long and painful path. I think that should be the title of my autobiography.
Oh, I love it. Sounds like a song too.
Yeah, yeah. It's Kate Allen's life. So looking back, I think that, you know, I almost did everything I could to not help myself, you know, not going to a program when I had figured out I was newly married and not going to, like, you know, trying to get into a Juilliard or a Yale or, you know, any other highly regarded drama program, playwriting program, to develop your tribe, your team, the people that you end up working with over and over again, and going to different venues and just, you know, developing collaborative working relationships that can kind of expand as you get older. So I didn't do that.
And why do you think you didn't do that?
Well, because I was scared, you know, 100% fear and 100% didn't feel like I was good enough. Yeah, I didn't have at that tender age, which is now my daughter's age, and she has no fear, that this is something that would be, that would accept me. You know, so somehow I'm just going to work and I'm just going to work and I'm just going to keep moving forward and be as good a writer as I can and develop and see plays and learn my craft and just never stop writing. So I did that. And then eventually, you know, about 10 years later, seven or so years later, I decided I had to up my game. So I took some courses, some graduate courses through NYU, which got me into an internship at a very, very respected theater company. And that's how I met so many of my fellow artists and people that I still know to this day, or led to people that I, you know, still know to this day. So 30 years ago now. So right. It's been a long time. So, you know, familiarity, we all know each other. We all get each other's work ethic. We all gravitate, you know, toward each other to a certain degree and have traveled with each other.
So it's interesting that in spite of yourself, mm-hmm. you have still managed to continue to work. You still have actors and directors and everyone else who's involved showing up for you, raising their hand for you in spite of yourself.
Yeah.
And just putting that out there, that right out there.
I know. I say, people ask me if I act, and like, never in a million years. And I didn't direct either, you know, because I'm not comfortable being looked at or raising my hand, and I'm not comfortable telling people what to do. Right. So I tell them,
it's probably a little hard to be famous if no one looks at you. I don't know.
Yeah,
you know.
I don't care about being famous. I literally don't. But I would like, you know, my work to be widely received, let's just say, and respected. I think I want to respect what I do, and I want it to impact other people, even if it's a small group. It'd be great if it were a bigger group, but that really feels, you know, right to me, that that's the change I'm trying to make for myself and for my work.
So you mentioned truth, and this is something that I hear artists talk about. And can you talk a little bit more about what that means and how do you decide which truth to put out there?
Well, you know, I think writers, to some degree, there could be many, many writers who validly disagree with me, but as far as my experience goes, is that writers tend to write themselves mm-hmm. in some way and take a side in an argument or a viewpoint. And in taking that approach, I'm kind of exploring what I really think about it. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Like, how do I really feel about, I don't know, manipulation and friendship, let's call it. And what is manipulation in friendship? And what is, you know, or manipulation in a relationship, period.
Right.
And I have to look this up because I literally can't remember it, but
This is not a subtle way of you saying that I manipulated you into being on my show, right? Because I did. I own it. I did it.
Oh, you didn't. And
I did it.
And it you didn't and it isn't. But I had people asking me frequently enough, you know, what do I write about? Which is one of the hardest things that a writer can be asked.
Right.
What do you write about? Because it's just never like, you know, I write about sea turtles.
sea turtles have truth.
They do. And they're so pure. Yep. Just really got to love it. I think I actually do remember it. So I'm just going to do it from memory. But I write about the practical consequences of emotional decisions.
Say it again. I love that.
The practical consequences of emotional decisions.
I just have this image of dropping a pebble in a pond and seeing the ripples.
Yeah, it's kind of like that,
That's amazing.
It could be this the smallest thing. And we've all had those moments. I think you and I have actually had this discussion about moments from our childhood where some person came in and did something or said something that was so impactful that they had no clue, and then they moved on.
Right.
And, it's kind of like that happens daily on a daily basis. Like somebody says something and it feels like kind of, ouch. And, now what am I going to do? Am I going to confront that person? Is that person going to get defensive? And it's just like a blip and a moment and it has impact, or someone, responds to you in a way you didn't expect and sets off this whole other thing.
Yes.
we've all been there, and I guess it starts from the feeling from that emotion, the feeling that comes from that emotional decision and how that is played out, how that
unfolds. And also how sometimes I'll carry around something. I'll have said something to someone 20 years ago and I'll carry that around. And then at some point I see them again, or for whatever reason, address that with them. And they're like, what the hell are you talking about?
Yeah,
so
exactly.
I've carried
exactly.
around
I remember
this,
saying that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. This, some moment that was a big moment for me that affected my feelings about myself or about something else and the other person, and just went right over their heads.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, that's.
Yeah. That's kind of the thing. That's kind of, making decisions based on for selfish reasons, selfish emotional reasons, and how they impact other people. And I just think that's an endlessly fascinating exploration.
Right.
That that's about truth. It's like, well, what did this really mean? Well, what did it really mean to you? Well, this is what it meant to me. And you could just continue like that and, until hopefully you have a resolution or you get disgusted and stop writing it.
Right.
That's what being a writer is.
It's good to have choices.
Yeah, yes. that's the choice.
Yes.
That's the choice. But I have to say, the more I've written and the more I've kind of built this trunk of material, the less I don't finish something. I'll explore a lot of stuff. I'll take notes on a lot of stuff. But if it doesn't move me to say, I know how this feels, they'll just stay notes.
So you're very into pop culture. And you,
pop
you write
culture
about it.
Trash.
Pop culture trash, even
That's
better.
Me. Yeah.
So first of all, what is pop culture trash? And second of all, why do you think this moves you so that you get so excited about this? I think of pop culture as very young and new. What do you bring to it at your age?
Interesting. It's interesting. My daughter said to me a couple of weeks ago, I used a term and she's like, how do you know that? I said,
I've asked you that question many times.
I know. And I said, I'm pop culture trash. I'm pop culture royalty. If I'm feeling really good about it, I'm mm-hmm. pop culture royalty. And I used it correctly. She said, yeah, that's the scary thing. I don't know. You just absorb it. And I guess it's just like in a way playing off a vibration of what is going on in the culture. And I'm really interested in that. I'm really interested in groupthink. I'm really interested in what is motivating people. I'm really curious about trends and what it says about our culture. I could bring up a couple of things, but it'll instantly date this podcast because it moves so quickly.
Your newest show that I was extremely fortunate to come see.
That you were extremely generous to come see.
Oh my gosh.
Across the country.
It was just so great. And I always just feel lucky to be in your orbit in any way, shape, or form, as you know. So that was very much to me set in pop culture. Yes. So
yes.
Can you talk about that? Because again, I find it really interesting that at your age, you are so interested in pop culture. And well, it'd be interesting to hear you say who you think is the main character, but to me, at least one of the main characters is very, very young. And that's the point.
Right. Well, I always write a part for my daughter.
Excellent.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's just my inspiration. I mean, 99, well, you know, I don't write 100 plays, but most right. of the time I think that Gen Z is so interesting and right. so evolved in a way that they have no right to be, considering how we, this, you know, platter of crap that we presented them with. They grew up with this horrible, toxic, you know, internet and social media and screens. And I find, you know, the vast majority of Gen Zers that I encounter to just be the most thoughtful, considerate, generous, non-judgmental, socially aware, like really concerned about other people. It's just by all rights, you know, they
just vastly superior.
I think so. I yeah. really do. I
yes.
think,
I have
you
learned.
Know, and millennials as well. And then the younger right. millennials, it's, I'm framing it around like the first kids who had to grow up with social media, yeah. internet bullying, this onslaught, and they're so young and everything is just being figured out while they're in the line of fire of it being figured out, and it's still not figured out. So,
right.
you know, for young people, my heart really, really goes out for them. But yeah, I wanted to tell a story about this very, according to the young woman who's in the piece, something that she wasn't even aware that she was doing, but because she's such a public person, there's, you know, a whole storm because she's being called out for something and judged, and, you know, people are piling on and saying, you did this thing, and she's not even aware of what it is at first. And then in order to save her reputation and or career, she is forced to tell some really, really personal information about herself.
And she's an influencer.
And right? she's an influencer, right. right. So it's incumbent upon her to not get canceled and to, first of all, she doesn't want to be considered guilty of what she's being accused of. So she has to really do some things, or she has to consider doing some things that she's very, very uncomfortable doing. And that's a horrible choice. You know, you can either have your, I think one of the lines in the play is, you know, you can have a career or you can have privacy. You can't have both.
Right.
At that kind of level where you're just shilling, you know, your lives or your life to some degree. Part of what comes with that is constant judgment and constant finger wagging and constant bullying. And
what's so great about the show is that this is all very heavy, what you're talking about. And at the same time, it's hilarious.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think to your earlier point, that is what's so great about your work, is that you manage to speak these truths and you have, you know, some pretty freaking heavy topics and we're still laughing.
Yeah.
And that's yeah. what's, and speaking of that, so I want you to tell us about Wallace Sprague.
Okay. Well, it's a serialized comedy fiction podcast, which means that it tells a story over all the episodes. So they're not like standalone. It's following one story. And it is about a small town psychiatrist who turns into a dog and doesn't lose any patients. And so, and there's a reason for that, but you don't find out until you get into it. And, but then it ended up being about all sorts of other things, but I think it's hilarious. I started writing to, you know, the actors, my wonderful, wonderful actors who just elevated the material so much that I could hear their voice when I was writing, you know, subsequent episodes. And it just brought the humor out more. And yeah, and then it began to be about a lot of other things while still retaining, I hope, the humor.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah.
More and more.
Yeah. And so, yeah. and it's interesting because the other day I looked at some of my statistics and the largest portion of our listening audience, you know, the largest number of people is in the age range of 28 to 34.
Oh, interesting. See?
Yeah.
There
yeah.
you go.
So it's skewing younger than me, certainly. But yeah, it kind of has that like wacky, bizarre, offbeat. You know, it's a taste. It's not everyone's taste. You know, it's really out there and the humor is really out there and there's lots of cussing. So I'm going to try not to
do
during
that's my favorite.
Your, yeah.
No. Yes, that's my brand.
Yes, on brand. Lots of F-bombs.
Oh, and then you have a new you're working up a new podcast. Tell me about that.
Yes. So this is called, so Wallace Sprague, Doc Psychiatrist, had its kind of story told. And now we're coming out with a new season, but we're calling it Jessica Darby, Zombie Lawyer. And it's all...
Or you're just getting so conventional now.
No, just fitting right in, aren't I? And it's with all the same characters, except they're all different people. Well, not all different people. They have different roles, right, life roles in this. And it takes place in the 16th century, and there are zombies. So it's takes place in the same town as Dog Psychiatrist, but centuries before that. So like I said, it became about all other things like reincarnation and soul groups and, you know, working out your
just light little topics
life.
There.
Yeah,
just
small, lighthearted topics. Yeah.
Just a little chat funny. At Starbucks. Yeah. Yes.
But still funny, one hopes.
Of course.
Yeah.
Because it's you.
Yeah. Because it's me and I have to make jokes. I can't help myself. And everything is too heavy otherwise.
Coming back to this whole thing about being on fire after 50, one of the things is that we realize that so many of the things that we assumed or felt, all of that got us to this point, but also some of it we realized wasn't really true or isn't true for us anymore. Mm-hmm. So, for example, as I've said many times, I know in my bones, I know in my hair, I know that you're going to be crazy commercially successful, since you're allergic to the word famous. I'm trying to respect that.
Thank you.
And I think that you're starting to know this too. I think you're starting to feel that it's coming. And for a long time, you've had some pretty strong beliefs about why you haven't yet been hugely commercially successful. And I would love for you to talk about some of those beliefs, where they came from. You know, what's, I know you've talked about fear, you know, where did all this come from, and what do you think has held you back to this point?
I mean, I think if you look back, there are like so many decisions that I made that would indicate, like, were you trying not to be successful? Like, my name has changed at least 3 times.
I only know 2.
Yeah. I know. I have to think again. It's been a long time. But
like, what were some of those beliefs? That you weren't good enough, or that you didn't deserve it, or do you not even know?
I kind of know. I don't know how honest I could be with myself, but I kind of always had this mentality, or maybe it was just a way to hide, that if I was good enough, you know, it's a meritocracy and my work will rise to the top and I'll just have to show up and be there and, you know, be able to do the job, but I won't have to do all the things that I hate to do, which is call people, which is, you know, be a little bit more, not forceful, but
like your friend Nancy.
Yeah. Like Nancy, who I admire like crazy.
Pushy for her ability out there, to do that. No, not a shy bone in her body.
No, you'll go and talk to anyone about
anything
that you feel like really strongly about. So I think that that's kind of like, I think that's kind of self-defeating, because then you start to think, well, people aren't noticing my work. Maybe my work isn't that good, and questioning that. Yeah. I don't know if I have another answer for that.
Well, in the image that I've had in my mind with you, because you've said for a long time, if my work is good enough, it will speak for itself. Mm-hmm. And I've had this image with you of you taking your work and going into the deepest recesses of your apartment or your home, mm-hmm, and finding a closet and going to the back of that closet and locking that work in a safe and not telling anyone about it, and taking the number off of your apartment so that nobody can find you, and then saying, well, my work will speak for itself. And I'm like, what work? Where's the work? No one knows about the work. At this stage of your life, it seems like, as your adoring friend, that you're finally starting to see that in fact, it's not just that the work will speak for itself, but you have to take the duct tape off of its mouth.
Yeah, it is. Deeply ingrained in me to not want to be visible. It's just my default. And, you know, I'm sure that goes way, way, way back, but I haven't stopped. I mean, right. I'm still doing it.
Right.
And I'm still loving it.
That I think is very much a big part of women our age, is we were always taught to be quiet, or at least quieter. Mm-hmm. We were always taught that it's impolite to really want to be seen. All of the, you know, bossy, bitchy, obnoxious, you know, all yeah. of the things that
stuck up,
yeah. right.
Yeah. yeah. What was the word? I watched the Sheryl Crow documentary, which was amazing. And they kept talking about her in this really shady way of calling her driven, you know, like she's just so driven, right. using that as a, you know, a slam, like,
right.
how dare she? Here's this woman doing everything in such a misogynistic industry, and she's crushing it. And she's, right. you know, this is before social media. Can you imagine? Yeah. And she's over 50. So,
oh yes.
Yeah.
Well,
you
and
have
what
her
I remember,
on a podcast, I'm sure.
Yes. I will. I love her, and I will be calling her.
I love her as well.
I'm sure she's just waiting for my phone call.
Of course she is.
Of course she is.
She's smart.
Yes. One thing I remember about Sheryl Crow, and this may or may not be accurate, but it's the impression that I had, was that she wrote so many songs that other people just blew up. And when she started making music or singing herself and performing herself, it seemed like that's when she started getting a bunch of crap and a bunch of blowback.
Yeah, because how dare she?
How dare she? Yes, yeah. It's fine. You sit back there and you write the songs, but you're not going to be right out there out front. And yeah. that's what I remember. So I want to know, you know, some of those beliefs that you had, that, you know, your work will speak for yourself and you don't, or itself, and you won't have to kind of put yourself out there, and some of the fear that you had and all of that. How have some of those beliefs changed for you? And like, why do you think they've changed for you? And so many people our age think, you know, well, if I haven't made it by now, I never will. And you seem, thank God, more charged up than ever. I mean, I do. I feel the shift in your energy. I see how you walk in the world. I feel like you're starting to see what I see when I look at you. And I just want to know, I want you to tell me more about that.
You know, a lot of personal work, which I think you're aware of, you know, just shifting mindset and shifting to a why not me was like heavy lifting, you know, right. because I could give you a million reasons why not me, you know, right. I could give you a million reasons, but when you distill it down into that's the whole statement, why not me? Well, I'll tell you why not. No, just why not me?
Right.
You know, that's all you need. And like,
right.
yeah, because my work is good. I work hard. I show up. I bring it all. I listen, I collaborate, you know, all the things that
everyone that's loves you.
You're sweet.
I'm just saying.
People love my work.
It helps.
Yeah. Yeah. People love my work. And I'm so, so honored that's the case. So that was, you know, that was the biggest thing, kind of uncorking that and just catching all the things that I was saying to myself that just, you know, were so defeatist without even realizing it, and right. to get over, you know, being afraid of reaching out, and the answer might be no. And if the answer is no, well, then there's going to be a yes, that's better. And
right.
that constant, you know, just, I think I said to you, you know, you need to tell yourself a better story, because you get into this, and I'm a writer. I have no excuse. I could
there
tell
you
a
go.
Better story.
Write yourself a better story,
yeah,
woman.
I could just totally write
just
myself a better
write another
story.
One.
Yeah. So I've been doing that.
Yeah, you have.
And, you know, really believing it. And then just saying things like, when someone asks you how you are, say something really positive about yourself. You know, how are you? I'm amazing.
Yep.
You feel amazing. I'm totally amazing. Are you kidding me?
You are amazing. Sometimes we just text those things to each other, right?
I know,
you're amazing.
I know.
No, you're amazing.
And they're 100% truth. Yet
it's
again.
True. We're both and amazing.
I know. And women should do that for each other more and
all
accept it and all the time. And that's what I think is great about this community that you're creating, is that, yeah, we can all lift each other up. You know,
because we're amazing.
Because I'm going to curse.
And we just keep getting more amazing.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. There's this huge force of energy that's out there, and we all believe in each other. And we don't believe in ourselves as much as we should.
Right.
I think if we could believe in ourselves as much as our best friends believe in us, we'd all be in better shape.
What would you say to other women over 50, which again, you and I left behind a little while ago, but who kind of have that gnawing in their bellies? You know, they just wonder if there's not something more for them. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering what you would say to them at this point.
Be a child. Explore, explore, explore. Don't judge yourself. I mean, kids never judge themselves for trying something, moving on to the next thing, coming back to the first thing until they find the thing that they really love, love, love to do, and embrace it. Don't judge yourself. Hardest thing. And to not be afraid of creating stuff that isn't good at first. You know, at first, there's going to be a learning curve. There's going to be a tremendous learning curve. And you have to be okay with that and recognize it for what it is, rather than saying, I'm not any good at this.
You wrote a show, and now you're turning it into a pilot.
A pilot series for television. Yeah, I am doing that. I just finished it. I consider the main character to be the badass middle-aged woman who is like constantly having to remind people that she's smarter than them, that she's more competent than them. She has many, 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 many flaws, but you know, she's just like a warrior general. That's how I view her, trying to get stuff done and with the battle scars to show for it. I just think that there's a story there, and we don't see a lot of women, stories about women who are middle-aged or older who aren't doddering,
right? You
know, passive.
We must have these stories.
We must have these.
They're everywhere.
They're us.
And there are more to come.
They're us. I didn't mean to smash my fist into my hand and create a sound problem.
Smash away.
So, like, there are more now. I mean, I could think of a few. Like, there's some HBO shows that show, you know, these women in more positive lights and just being active and part of their lives and not the butt of the joke or not just a background character. It's just like people we know.
People we know.
Setting it on fire.
Yep.
So that is kind of like my mission. Like I want to represent that. I want to represent it with humor. I want to represent it with grace. I want to represent it with change and growth for this character and, you know, certainly obstacles and conflict for this character, and hopefully very, very, very funny. Yeah, it's real life stuff.
So where are you in 5 years from now in your ideal scenario? And more importantly, how do I fit into that? Because I need to be pretty much front and center.
I think you have to be part of that if that is going to happen. Whatever that is going
Fair
to happen.
Fair enough.
I need you by my side saying, hello, over here.
Hello, everyone, look at Kate. She's over here.
In 5 years, I hope I'm going to be really audacious, just because I want your listeners to also be audacious, and I'm still training myself to be audacious for myself, and it's a muscle. Make no mistake, I want to be running a show.
Yes.
A TV show. And
yes.
And raise this dialogue and this whole army of fabulous women who are doing amazing
things.
Fabulous things.
Yeah. Awesome. Tell us where we find you.
Well, you can find the podcast at wallacesprague.com. So that's WALACESPRAUGUE.com.
I'll put it in the show notes.
No one knows who I am or what I do. wallacesprague.com. And you can listen to the first two seasons of the podcast here. The third season is coming out, I hope, this summer. Working on it feverishly right now. I am on Instagram with Dog Psychiatrist, you know, at Dog Psychiatrist, Zombie Lure Podcast.
And
Kate Allen, writer, artist. Thanks to Nancy Davis.
All right. Well, I love you. I'm so excited. I'm so proud of you. I'm so grateful for you. And I just
we'll
think
talk
you're
soon.
All that.
I think you're all that, lady.
Yeah. Thank you so much for listening to Fire After 50. If you enjoyed this episode, I'd love for you to share it with your friends and family. I'd also be deeply grateful if you'd leave me a review wherever you listen to it. Finally, I'd love to hear from you, so please DM me on Instagram at FireAfter50, that's FireAfter50, or through my Facebook page under the same name. Thank you so much again for being here.